Where I've been living is in Zimbabwe, and I've been living with a group of people, a tribal group called the Matabele people, and they have some interesting customs. One particular custom that they have is if you go to their place for a meal, they haven't quite got onto the concept of women's lib yet. And so if you're an important male guest, you would find that just before the meal, one of the younger girls in the family would come to the door of the room that you're sitting in waiting for the meal, and she would get down on her knees. She would have a basin of water in her hand, she'd have a little tea towel over her arm, and she would crawl on her knees up to you, being probably the most important guest, and she would allow you to wash your hands and allow you to dry your hands before you ate your food. Now, when that first happens to you, coming from a land like Australia, you feel rather uncomfortable because you want the girl to get up, you don't want her to demean herself in front of you. But after it's happened, you start to think about why it happened, some of the reasons behind it, and you start to appreciate the fact that this person is showing you a great deal of respect. Now, maybe they don't need to show you respect, but there's a lot of thinking behind the action. And so it's something that makes you feel humbled that somebody would be prepared to do that for you, and in some ways it makes you feel uncomfortable. John chapter 13, verse 1. It was just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. The evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I am doing, but later you'll understand." "No," said Peter, "you'll never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." "Then, Lord," said Simon, "not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." Jesus answered, "A person who has had a bath needs only to wash his feet. His whole body is clean, and you are clean, though not every one of you, for he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he said not everyone was clean." When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I have done for you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet." Now, it's normal when we read this particular passage for us to take a particular slant as we talk about that. And I guess that in most cases we talk about the attitude that Jesus had to service as he washed his disciples' feet. The fact that he humbled himself and was prepared to go to those great lengths in order to show his disciples an example of what a servant should be. And I don't particularly want to dwell on that particular section this morning. I would like to look more at the action. Was there any symbolism in what Jesus did as he washed the disciples' feet? Did he mean that we literally should wash each other's feet on a Sunday morning? Was he trying to pass on a message? Was there some object lesson in what he was doing? And so it might be worth just having a look at the passage. There are a number of different opinions about what Jesus might have been symbolising as he did this. And I particularly favour one. If you want to disagree with me, I'll be quite happy for you to do that later. But this is the one that suits me the most anyhow. Verse 5. Why the practice? If we just read there, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet. I think most of us understand that the Oriental countryside was pretty dirty and dusty. They didn't have tarred roads. When droughts came, there wasn't a great deal of grass. And so the whole situation there was one of dust and dirt. And it's not a nice sort of an area to be. You're always dirty. You wash your clothes and you finish up very soon having your clothes dirty again. And so it would be normal for the Oriental person early in the day to have a bath, especially if he was going out for a meal. And so he would get himself clean. And then as he arrived at the host's house, because he was wearing only sandals, it was the normal pattern for a servant to come and to wash the person's feet. And so he would feel comfortable, especially when they used to often recline as they ate their meals. You can imagine what it would be like sitting beside somebody else whose feet were dirty from just walking on the roads. And so there were practical reasons for doing that. And so we find that because none of the disciples were prepared to wash each other's feet, there was no servant available to do it, we find that Jesus here is interested in doing this for his disciples. And poor old Peter is discomforted, isn't he? In verse 6 there it says, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Now I wonder why he thought that. I guess he thought that the roles should have been reversed. He would have been thinking, well, I should really be washing Jesus' feet, and here he's wanting to wash mine. And believe it or not, they'd just been arguing before that as to who was the greatest. Imagine how Peter would have felt as Jesus comes to him to wash his feet. Now we get the first hint that Jesus might be doing something more than just literally washing the dirt off their feet. In verse 7 there it says, "You don't realise now what I'm doing, but later you'll understand." Now surely it was obvious to Peter that Jesus was washing his feet. Surely that was obvious. And maybe it was obvious to Peter that Jesus was being a servant. Surely that was obvious too. But Jesus said to him, "You don't understand what I'm doing at the moment. Later you will understand." And so Peter digs in verse 8, the beginning of verse 8 there. He says, "No, you'll never wash my feet." And then Jesus replies to that, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." Now that would have stopped Peter, wouldn't it? What's Jesus saying? Unless I wash your feet, Peter, our relationship is broken. Unless I wash your feet, our relationship is broken. I don't wash, we're not friends. Well, Peter reacts to that and he says, well, if that's the case, if relationship is going to be broken, don't just wash my feet, but wash my hands and my head as well. If relationship is at stake, wash everything. Lord, I don't want to be separated from you. Think that was what Jesus was saying? If you don't literally let me wash your feet, our relationship is broken. It doesn't seem to make sense, does it? It's not a practical thing. And so verses 10 and 11 help possibly to clarify it. Jesus says a person who has had a bath needs only to wash his feet. His whole body is clean. And you are clean, though not every one of you, for he knew who was going to betray him. If we take that on face value, Jesus is saying to the disciples, well, I know that before you came here you all had a bath. And physically you've washed all the dirt off yourselves. Except maybe for one person who forgot to have a bath. And he's a bit on the nose. Now, Jesus is not saying that, is he? He's not literally saying that, you all had a bath before you came. So he must have been saying something more in depth. He must have been trying to pass on some message. And this is what I think the message is that he was trying to pass on to his disciples. He's saying this, "You have all accepted me as Lord," or almost all. Almost every one of you. Almost every one of you have embraced the message of the kingdom that has resulted in your spiritual cleansing. Your hearts have been cleaned because you have accepted me as Messiah. You've bathed. However, as you walk along the Christian pathway, your feet, your spiritual feet, are going to become dirty with sin. You're going to commit things that are going to separate us, that are going to bring barriers in between me and yourselves. Our relationship is going to be impoverished unless you allow me to wash your feet. And I think that's the message that Jesus was passing on by picture to his disciples. In a spiritual sense, in our case today, it's just the same. as we continue in our Christian experience, our spiritual feet do become muddied, don't they? We get to a point where the relationship that we had with Jesus is not as deep as it used to be. We get to the point where we don't feel like praying and we don't feel like reading God's word. The things that we do give us a guilty conscience, and so we can't feel as if we have a clear conscience before Jesus. And in a sense today, I think Jesus is still very much willing to wash our feet. He's very much willing. 1 John 1 and 9 says, if we confess our sin, he's faithful and just to forgive us our sin and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. And so he's wanting us, in our spiritual experience today, to ask him to wash our feet. Now, I would like to go on from that to another point that Jesus made, and it's a very practical point, and we find it in verse 14. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. Now again, some people take this very literally and they wash each other's feet. They practically do that, and they do that to show that a certain amount of humility, and it, for those people who have ever done that, it's a moving experience. It's something that is worth doing. Now I think that if we're going to talk about it at a deeper level, the message that Jesus is passing on to us, then I think that we need to see it in a slightly different light. I've been reading a book over the past 2 years, I guess, now and again, off and on, a couple of times I've read it through, by John White, one of my favourite authors, and it's called Healing the Wounded. And the foreword in that book is written by Ray Steadman, and he just makes a little comment in the foreword of that book about this whole concept of foot washing. And I'd never thought about it before, and this is actually where the germ came from for these thoughts. Ray Steadman, I can't quote him, I didn't bring it with me, but he just makes the point that we as Christians should be prepared to wash one another's feet. Now I said that this is in the context of church discipline. When we think about the area of church discipline, we say, well, that's a responsibility for the elders in the church, isn't it? We think these problems are far too heavy for me as an individual to solve or to handle or to play with, and so it's much better that church discipline be left to the leaders of the church, the people who are supposed to be the spiritual people, the ones who are supposed to know all the answers. Well, in some ways that is true. In some ways that is true. That is the elders' responsibility, in the end, to look after church discipline. Even more so, it's possibly the whole church's responsibility. But in the light of what we've been talking about today, I think many of our problems in our churches would not get so big if church discipline was handled in this particular area. This particular area of individuals washing each other's feet before the problems get out of hand. So many times we hear about the things going on in America, and they're happening in our church as well, aren't they? Where the church secretary runs off with the minister, and all these things that are going on behind the situation. Now, I'm sure if the church secretary's friend knew that she was friendly with the minister to a certain extent, and the church secretary's friend had said something to the church secretary early on, then the problem wouldn't have got so much out of hand as it eventually does. And so many of our problems wouldn't be so big if we as individuals act in a way that the Bible tells us to, and that we should be prepared to wash each other's feet. Matthew seems to have the thing summed up for the grassroots concept of church discipline. In two passages, Matthew 18 and 15, it says this: if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault, and if he listens, you've won your brother. Now what's it say? If your brother sins against you, go and tell somebody else and share it with them first before you go and tell your brother. or go and sort of chat about it over the fence to the next door neighbour, or sort of gossip about it at the men's meeting. I won't say the ladies' meeting. Does it say that? It doesn't say that. It says, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault, and if he listens, you've won your brother. Then there's a procedure to follow after that, but let's not worry about that at the moment. Matthew 5 and 23, Matthew says this, if you're offering your gift at the altar, and you there remember your brother has something against you, then you've got to do something about it. Now that's interesting, isn't it? The first one says, if your brother sins against you, in other words, this brother over here has offended me, then I'm supposed to go to my brother and fix up the problem. And then if I know that my brother has something against me, whose responsibility is it? Mine. So Matthew has it covered from both sides. Whenever there's a situation where church discipline at grassroots is required, I'm the one that's supposed to be fixing the problem as an individual. It's not the other person's responsibility, it's me. And so if you've offended your brother, or your brother is offended by you, then in either situation, who has to act? Me. Now, at this point, it would be good to talk about the practice of carrying that out, because obviously there are major pitfalls involved with me going to somebody and saying, listen, you've sinned against me, let's fix this problem up. And we don't have time this morning to talk about that, but I would like to talk about that some other time. Maybe you'd like to think about that. And so we'll leave that bit out. But I just want to come back to what we were talking about before, where Jesus washed the disciples' feet. Now, in particular, he was dealing with Peter, wasn't he? Poor old Peter. Did Jesus wash Peter's feet? I guess in a literal sense, he did wash Peter's feet. I guess that did happen on that particular night. But what did Peter have to go through after that in his spiritual walk? What had Peter claimed that evening? Jesus, I would lay down my life for you. And Jesus takes them out to the garden and he goes off to pray. And what does Peter do? He goes to sleep. And so the spiritual relationship that was there between Jesus and Peter, there's just something come between it. Peter's conscience is a little bit pricked because he's gone to sleep when he should have been waiting up with Jesus. And Jesus doesn't say a great deal about that. A little while later, Jesus is taken off. They're in the high priest's house. What happens to Peter? Three times. Can you imagine the way that he would have been so distressed by the fact that he denied the Lord, to the extent of swearing and cursing and saying, I don't know this person. And yet, a couple of hours before, he'd said, I'll lay down my life for you. And so time went on. We have the death of Jesus, the resurrection of Jesus, and finally, right towards the end of John there, we've got John 21. And we find Peter, and what's he say? He says to the other fellows there, down by the lake, he says, I'm going fishing. And off they go. They go out in the boat and they go fishing, and we know that the Lord arrives. And so Peter jumps out of the boat and swims into the shore, and he goes and he meets Jesus. They have a meal together. And then what does Jesus say in John 21:15? Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these? Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these? And so they go through that little talk, that little discussion between the two of them there. And we find that Peter is reinstated. Peter has had his feet washed, because Jesus was prepared to talk with him, to confront and to deal with the problems that Peter had had previously. Jesus is prepared to deal with our problems, the things that have separated us from him over the past week. over the past month, over the past years. He's always prepared to wash our feet. And so we should be continuous in the way that we come to Him, asking Him to cleanse our feet. Reconciliation, the bringing back together, is the heart of the gospel.